everybody, and welcome to the DieCast. I'm your host, Rootsgar, and with me are Mumbles.
Hello.
Chris.
Hello.
And Josh, I guess.
I would just like to state for the record, Rootsgar is, like, frighteningly gung-ho about the DieCast this week.
Yeah, I don't know what we're in really for here. It's really cute. Yeah. It's like, guys, are we going to do it yet? It's like opening Christmas presents. Like, are we going to open presents yet, or... Let's go.
It's like the dog. You put treats in a box under the tree for Christmas, and the dog knows they're there. And it's just like running around in circles, going like, what do we do with this box? What is this?
I don't mean to make you guys feel rushed. I'm just very focused on business today. And this is business, our business, in a very real sense.
Okay, now you're just being creepy.
I'm just picturing the kid from BoJack Horseman.
Business guy! I'm telling you. Oh, business guy. Oh.
I just got back from the business factory. I did a business.
I went to work.
I don't get this reference. Moving along! So, today, Mumbles has something about ranching and slime to talk to us about.
Slime ranching!
Well, I thought that was implied by ranching and slime, that you were doing the two of them. That you weren't just ranching cows, and then there's slime involved in some kind of secondary capacity.
Slime ranching. Listen, okay, I'm just going to start. I'm going to start talking about slime ranching. You brought it up, so now I'm going to talk about it.
Okay, you know what? You know what? Do it that way.
Okay, so it's not done yet. It's still in, like, developmental phase, greenlit. I don't know how that shit works.
Maybe 50% of the slime has been ranched up to this point. That's what I'm getting so far.
Anyway, so the game isn't completely finished, but you should still buy it. It's a first-person shooter Harvest Moon game, is the best way to sell it.
Back up. A first-person shooter Harvest Moon game.
Okay, so it is a first-person shooter, and you have a gun that can suck up stuff and shoot shit out, right? So you go out into the wilderness, and you suck up slimes, and you bring them back to your ranch, and you put them in a corral, and you make sure they have music and food, and the different slimes eat different kinds of shit. So I have a chicken coop, I have a fruit tree, I have carrots, well, and also I have beetroots, but I accidentally forgot to replant it, so I'm doing carrots right now. But so you put them in separate little corrals, and they all have their different, like, quirks. Like, the rock ones will attack you, and if they attack you too much, you die. The kitty cat ones are mischievous and steal shit. So if you, like, throw fruit in there, they'll be like, mine! And they, like, steal it and run away with it. And then there's, like, a glowy fairy light one that, like, flutters and stuff. And they all have separate needs. Like, the cats only eat chickens. The rocks will only eat vegetables. The glowy light guys will only eat fruit. And then there's the pink default slimes. And if you put a pink default slime in the corral with one of these special ones, it'll eat... I think it eats the slime. Or at least it eats the poop. And it'll turn into whatever that is, but giant-sized. And that makes them very difficult to handle.
Turn into giant poop?
Yeah. No. It'll turn the slime into a giant version of whatever poop it had eaten. And
I feel like deeply lost the meaning of this game. Like, I am already far beyond understanding this game on a fundamental level.
Are you, like, making the slimes grow crops for the benefit of the slimes? Or, like...
The crop is their poop.
What do you do with the crops?
The crop is their poop. So they poop... When you feed them, they poop out...
You're making slime poop. And then you're taking the poop that came out of a slime, and you're just selling it.
Yes. Yes, that is exactly
what
you're doing.
Is this slime slavery?
No, they love it. They're happy.
Sounds like an Activision simulator.
It's their fondest... You take a bunch of slime and you force feed them until they shit something out, and then you sell it.
It sounds like a Ubisoft simulator at this point.
Look, I don't want no fucking deep meaning, Mr. Errant Signal. It's a cute game where you fucking take care of little slimes. They poop out little diamonds and you sell them on the internet. That's all it is. That's some kind of, like, fucking analogy.
Well, now you
for...
make it sound more like Reddit.
Anyway, it's super cute. It is super fucking fun. I played it nonstop for, like, 5 hours yesterday. I think I got to as far as you can go as, like, because since it's not complete, I think I got about as far as you can go without getting super bored. But I might go back and keep playing it just to see if I am going to get super bored. Because I'm not bored yet. I love it.
You live dangerously.
I do. So, everyone go buy it. Can I do my whole week's worth of stuff right now?
Is yeah, that okay? Go for it.
Yeah, just go ahead. Go right into yelling at nerds until they exercise properly.
Okay. So, alright. So, I know January is when everyone tries to do any kind of exercise and fix their diet and all that shit. And, like, if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I like eating healthy and I like working out at least 3 times a week, usually more. And I think that if you've never worked out before, first of all, if you want to, like, lose weight, you don't need to work out necessarily. It's more about just fixing your diet and eating a little bit better. But if you want more mobility and you want to be stronger physically, I really recommend DDP yoga. When I had a hard time walking, and like my nerves were fucked up, I did DDP yoga about 3 times a week, even when I first started, but you could do it 2 times a week and be fine. And it completely like cleared up a lot of stuff for me. So if you've never done any working out before, like DDP yoga is the bomb, and it just takes care of your body because it's like half strength building, half physical therapy. It's rad. So if you're looking to do exercise, that's the shit.
What exactly is DDP yoga? Is it like? Is it a Wii motion board game? Or...
No, it's not a game. It's not a game. It's a game.
You can't talk about things that aren't games on the diecast.
I know.
Yeah, that never happens, Josh. Mr. Plumbing Astronaut.
The thing is that I know that the part of being a nerd is that you like staying indoors, playing games all day, reading comic books. That's just part of being a nerd. And the problem with that is that your body goes to shit. So I think that this is the best way to get you from not having your body go to shit. And if you're worried about that, this is the best way. Especially people who have back problems. Like, I had severe back problems. I used to throw my back out probably once a year. And now I don't. I haven't thrown my back out since I started DDP yoga. So, I mean, it's just for that kind of stuff, really. Just if you have aches and pains and want to take care of it. But anyway, so it's DDP is a wrestler who fucked up his back.
Oh.
And so,
I understand now.
And so, yeah. And so he really screwed up his back because being a wrestler, you screw up your body, basically. And so he developed this mix of yoga and physical therapy to basically strengthen yourself and open up your back and all that stuff. So it's good for you. There's a lot of modifications if you're just starting out. I really, really, really recommend it. It totally, like, changed my life. And now I can do crazy Pilates and stuff, which is radical. And lift weights and all kinds of fun athletic things.
I actually want to support what Mumbles is saying here. And I've actually very recently started doing something calisthenic. Just like anything. Just any exercises at all for the first time.
Good.
And I will say that there's a significant improvement in just general day-to-day feelings. And it's not super hard as long as you escalate. Like, I went from literally not being able to do a push-up to, you know, being able to do those fairly consistently as part of a workout, and that's really
good.
As long as you, it's just about making time to do it somewhat regularly. It's not about just killing yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you can kill yourself if you enjoy it, like I do. I like
some
doing
people
really
do.
Difficult stuff now. Yeah,
euthanasia
I like doing difficult
is officially
stuff
supported by spoiler warning and the diecast.
Welcome to the diecast.
But only
killing
if you
yourself
enjoy it.
With extraordinary acts of strength recommended. File for
I can't think of anything that's more mumbles, honestly. But like, yeah, just if even if you don't want to put down money for DDP yoga, just looking into like good back stretches, mobility, flexibility stuff. That's really what it's about, and then you won't have a hurt back all the time like I used to, and you'll be able to move around when you feel like it. It's good for you.
Just literally having mobility.
Yeah, exactly. Being able to touch your toes. There was a time I couldn't touch my toes, but now it's no problem.
I can't do that shit.
What? Yeah. Well, then there you go.
No, I cannot touch my toes. My hands dangle kind of awkwardly. I am the least flexible human being that was ever printed.
You need to do yoga.
You are kind of a stick.
You need to do yoga.
I am open to the idea that I need to do yoga, and there may come a time when it is so.
So you know that, like, Mumbles is just gonna fucking kick your door in next week sometime.
We're doing DDP yoga!
Oh, haul in a bunch of DDP yoga DVDs.
Murdering other people with feats of strength. Also diecast approved.
I gave away, I bought some extra DDP yoga stuff, and I actually gave them away on Twitter at one point. So, yeah, I like sharing the love. Sharing that DDP yoga love.
Sharing the physical agony love. Anyway, so next up, we've got Josh wanted to talk about Cradle, and by talk about Cradle, I gather that he wanted to grouse. He had a bee, and it was inside his bonnet, and he wants to let that bee out.
I mean, like, grousing is good. Don't we all agree that grousing is an important part of the process of being, you know, me?
Wait! Before Josh says anything, Danganronpa is coming to fucking Steam, and you motherfuckers should play it. It is a bear that locks a bunch of people into a school, and then murder mystery happens, and then you become part of the Truth Bullet Club, just like me. So fucking play it. All right, I'm done. I shot my promo.
Okay, I'm glad. I'm actually really glad that you covered that. I'm negligent as a host for not allowing you to tell us that we should all be bear cops. And shoot people.
No!
High
school student cops, sorry.
Hey, Atlas, I know all of you, 100% of you in the Atlas company, listen to this podcast exclusively. Could you please put a fucking Persona game on the PC at some point? Maybe. That'd be great.
I'm surprised they haven't done it. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane that they haven't. Good thing I have a PS Vita. You motherfuckers don't have a PS Vita because you suck.
I have one, and I can play
visual novels.
I'm like, oh man, I should get a PS Vita just so I can play Persona 4 Golden. And then I'm like,
there are other good games on the Vita, like two Danganronpa games. And visual novels, and a fishing game where you play an anime girl. There are games on the PS
Vita. It is weird
that
has basically become the import visual novels console, and that's it.
Oh, they have three Danganronpa games. The third-person shooter. I want to go play Danganronpa.
I'm completely losing train of like this entire category of things that exist. So I'm going to kick the can over back to Josh to get back to some good old-fashioned complaining, which I think we're all
like
pretty much well-versed in at this point. Hello. That's like our default state for the most part.
So 6 months ago, I needed to replace my faucet.
Oh, dear Lord.
This doesn't actually have anything to do with it. I just like to...
I wasn't ruling it out.
You know, all the time. Yeah, I'm going to find a way to draw a comparison between my kitchen faucet and, like, interesting but poorly constructed transhumanist narratives somehow.
Which, speaking of which...
So Cradle is a pretty cool game. About it's weird. 2015 had a number of like Philip K. Dick-esque transhumanist games, and you know, like the most obvious being Soma. Cradle is perhaps more interestingly written than Soma in its story, or at least in terms of what it tries to touch on. And it's an interesting story about the nature of human consciousness and time travel and shit. So you wake up in a yurt in Mongolia with no memory of who the hell you are. You
That's
know,
a
because
great
amnesia.
Start. Every story yep. should start that way.
And you very early on put together this robot lady that's also sitting in your yurt, and the two of you try to figure out what's going on, and this is going to spoil Cradle here, but I need to talk about what I want to talk about. And eventually you discover that through some crazy shit that's... Okay, so there's a sterility plague that's basically going... that's ravaged the human population, so people have been taking refuge in basically transferring their consciousnesses to robot bodies. There is a certain amount of, like, purity that can be quantified of people's DNA, and this becomes important because after they start transferring people to robot bodies, people of a low DNA purity quotient, which is represented by a two-digit number, as all important things are. No.
Okay.
This becomes a problem because people that have low purity quotients tend to not react very well to being in robot bodies and sometimes overload and blow up and create weird, crazy anomalies in space, basically, that people can't go into lest they get basically killed, and weird stuff happens in these singularities and whatnot. And they've also discovered ways to, like, harvest, like, energy from emotional responses. So the response to people, like, to people of low purity quotients is to put them all into stasis, basically. Put them all asleep so they don't fucking blow up and kill everyone. But then they start to slowly realize that, like, the people with high purity quotients, well, they start to sort of burn out of this emotional energy, and they need to harvest it from people with the low purity quotients, who they call the uglies. So there's this really interesting undercurrent of, like, what does it mean to... like, what are the implications of being able to harvest energy from emotions themselves, and what are the implications of, like, this sort of new kind of class warfare of people who are emotionally viable but dangerous, and people who are not emotionally viable but not going to blow up, and all this interesting stuff. And it would be really interesting if the game were actually about any of this, but all that I just told you I've gleaned from reading, like, very vague newspaper scrappings in the yurt.
Is it actually a romance simulator?
It's not. Like, it's a game about block puzzle minigames. That's not even a fucking joke. I guess they felt they had to gamify it, so you're near your yurt is this amusement park, which you discover was actually a treatment center for kids with a very peculiar disease where they couldn't stand the sight of human bodies. And because they needed to gamify the game, I guess, so it wasn't a walking simulator, they put a bunch of, like five times you have to go into this place to get a particular part to fix the robot lady and play these, like, ridiculous, like, block puzzle mini games where you run around and you have to pick up cubes of a particular color and throw them into a central stream and not fall off of the map.
Well, I've noticed this lately, that games that would be dubbed walking simulators try and put in as many, like, games or puzzles as they can to avoid the game... that label. And that's, I think that's unfortunate, because it's clearly, like, not woven into the fabric of the game, so, like, why bother? Just go with the fact that some people are not gonna like your game.
Yeah, the game also has, like those puzzles serve absolutely no... Like, they're excused in the narrative by, like, you know, they have an explanation, so they're not just complete non sequiturs, but they're, like, they do nothing to enhance the narrative of the game at all. And the game also suffers a lot from, like really dumb adventure game puzzles. Like, the very first thing is you wake up at the table, and there is a note on the table that says, please make food for Onguts, which you don't know who Onguts is at this point, and it gives you a recipe, and the first recipe is, put the red pot on the furnace. And you're sitting there, and there's a red teapot in front of... Well, there's a white teapot with, like, a red stripe in front of you, and you think, like, oh, naturally you think, that must be the red pot. But that's not actually the red pot. The red pot is a brown wok that's sitting in your kitchen area, which is not red and not a pot. I don't know if that was a translation issue or something, but it was... I spent altogether too much time trying to figure out what the hell they were having me do, and that happened several times in the game.
Well, they needed that in the game, Josh, so it could be a walking simulator.
I guess. Anyway, so eventually you get to the end of the story, and you discover that, and again, I am spoiling Cradle, so if you, for some reason, really want to play this game, if all this has sounded really cool to you, and you don't want to know the ending of this game... then don't listen to this segment and skip to the next segment on the show notes. But the very end of the game, you discover that... by the way, something I forgot to mention. The amusement park / treatment center near your yurt had someone blow up in it, as I mentioned before. And so it's this weird anomaly area. You get to the end of the game... The robot lady you're working on has, like, been breaking down, and she's shutting down, so... But you know that you can turn her back on for just a couple more minutes by running a big electrical charge through her circuits, and there's a big lightning storm going on. So you take her into this... to the center of this abandoned... treatment center, which is a really cool looking structure, incidentally. This game is pretty pretty. And hook her up to a lightning rod and put a thing in, plug her into a cable that's being constantly struck by lightning. Lightning strikes, you get this little bit of ending dialogue, and then your character says, it's okay, I'll explain everything, I know what to do. And then you get the ending cutscene, where, and I'm not fucking joking here, the very beginning of the ending cutscene highlights the readable objects in your yurt that you have to go and look at in order to understand what is happening in the ending of the game. And and then doesn't tell you what's going on. And then you get a cutscene where it's like 25 years in the past, because, by the way, you time traveled. You sent yourself or some telepathic memory of yourself to you in the past. And then you text some guy that's mentioned twice, a series of numbers that's mentioned once, and that's the thing that allows this guy to stop the sterility plague from taking hold. And this is like there's a little like newspaper article in your yurt that says, like, it's an interview with this guy that you end up texting, and he basically says, like, if I could send any text to myself in the past, I would send these numbers. And if only we'd known this sequence of numbers, I think it's like 3513, if only we'd known that, we would have been able to prevent everything. What does this sequence of numbers mean? We've known it was a spell or something. And they talk about like how this sequence of numbers is important. At no point ever is it explained why this sequence of numbers is important or why that would solve the plague or anything like that. There's none of that in the game at all. It's just like, oh, by the way, you time traveled, which is something that you could very easily miss by not reading a particular thing in the yurt. You time traveled back into the past and texted a guy some MacGuffin number to fix everything, I guess.
So what I'm gathering, Josh, is that you didn't like the story very much.
It was deeply unsatisfying as a way to end the story. And I kind of want to use this as a jumping off point to talk about this phenomenon, particularly in indie games, that has just kind of always pissed me off, which is like, what is it about indie game stories and occasionally AAA game stories that, like, they're constructed in such a way that it doesn't seem like anyone actually knew what they were writing? Like, I originally thought this was a budget thing. Like, oh no, I don't have the money to do a big, complex video game story, so I'm going to write a bunch of vaguely poetic, abstract, weird text files about how I guess my girlfriend died or left me, and that's the story of Braid, the guy with time powers, I guess.
Braid was great. You take that back. Braid was fantastic.
Was it great for the story, though?
Yes, I liked the story. And I actually thought that the Braid story was simplistic. I thought it was just sort of like, I'm trying to fix this shitty, like, relationship, but I can't, and it doesn't matter if I can go forward in time. Sorry. I like Braid.
Okay, Braid might be a poor example of this, but take something like Dear Esther.
Okay.
I'm starting increasingly to feel like this is actually a stylistic choice. Like, there's some idea that a video game narrative that is like postmodernist, like it means whatever you get out of it is what it means, and it doesn't matter that we don't have a coherent plot. It's just like what you feel, man. That's what really happened. And my response to that is no, fuck you. I want to believe that at some point, someone, you know, that I could go and ask your lead writer to produce for me a document that says, here is what is actually going on in this video game story, and it would be coherent and make sense. You don't have to spell that out for me, mind you. You don't have to tell me in the game exactly what's happening all the time. I don't have a problem with subtle stories or more abstract stories, but I really want to get the sense that, like, at some point, someone, somewhere writing the game wrote a document that said, like, here's what's actually happening in this video game, basically. And it was a coherent document that made sense. And with a lot of indie games, I get the impression that that's not something that actually happened at some point. Like, I talked about, like, a year and a half ago, this game called Home, not Gone Home, but just Home, H-O-M-E, where it was, like, a side-scrolling, sort of Lone Survivor-esque horror game that at the very end asked you to decide whether or not you were the murderer or not. And that was like, what?
Oh, yeah.
Why? No, you
okay,
tell
okay,
me.
Okay, Joshua. I understand what you're saying, but don't you think that making video games is hard? Like,
oh yeah, I agree, and that's why I thought that I think in many cases this is still a budget thing. Like, if story is not the number one item on your list, your checklist, you know, writing a story can be prohibitive, and well, not writing a story, but implementing it can be, you know, prohibitively expensive for a lot of indies. I understand that. I just feel like it's becoming like the sort of, oh, I use retro, in air quotes, pixel art, because that's what indie games use.
Yeah.
You're worrying it's becoming
that
an affectation.
Yeah.
I think that making games is really fucking difficult, and people don't realize that, like, they need to be good at writing plots, writing characters, art design, game design, coding it so you can play it without it having, like, glitching out. Like, you have to have all of these skills, or find people who have these skills, and then rely on that person to have that skill, and if they don't have that skill, then your game is fucked. And, like,
yeah.
I'm always curious where people start writing games, and then if the game mechanics or what other people are doing impact that. And so then you actually had an idea of something you were going to do, but since the game mechanics don't agree with it and they don't complement each other, then whatever thoughts you had or story and characters you had are completely lost because the game mechanics don't fit. And I think that's why so many people do legitimate walking simulators, because, like, it allows them to tell exactly the story that they want to tell. And they don't have to worry about game mechanics, which is another cop-out. But, I mean, I'm not defending it. I think this sounds, I mean, this sounds bad.
Well, I don't think you necessarily need to have game mechanics to have, you know, an interesting game. You know, walking simulators, I have no problem with.
Yeah, but I understand that. But there are a lot of people who don't think that walking simulator is a form of video games. And if you create a game that is a walking simulator that doesn't have a lot of interactivity, then there's a chance that your game is going to get fucked over because people don't like that genre and they don't think it's legitimate. And so you feel obligated to put in puzzles and dumb game mechanics that don't mean anything. And
there's
just
a pretty hostile
stuff.
Environment towards that stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Towards
yeah.
this walking simulator.
I mean, from what you're describing, it sounds like it was just shitty writing, honestly. But
oh, I should clarify that, like, with Cradle, I don't believe for a second that they didn't have an idea of, like, what the hell was going on with the plot. I think it was 100% a situation where, like, they didn't design the game properly for the story they wanted to tell, or they ran out of money. But it reminded me of that sort of unsatisfying experience of, like, this game is trying to have a narrative, but the narrative is, like, indistinct, and I have to really work to put together something that makes any kind of sense.
I think the thing with indie games is, like, there's so many people trying now to tell full stories, but they don't have the mechanics that allow them to do that. It's like, I don't know, like, trying to put on a WrestleMania when you only, like, have your wrestling ring in a fucking gymnasium at a high school. Like, you only have so much resources, and I think a lot of indie game developers think bigger than what they have. And it's only the developers that think within the box that they have and their tools that make good games. I think everyone else kind of, they fuck up along the way, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm really curious about Campster's thoughts about this, because he tends to play much more what I would use the term as, like, artsy, in air quotes, indie games than I do, that tend to have these sort of very subtle and sometimes completely indistinct stories in them more often.
I mean, it depends on what the game's trying to do.
Right.
Like, I think you could certainly levy a potential accusation of, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. I really liked, for example, Glitchhikers. I really, really enjoyed that, even though its story is borderline nonsensical. It's just you going for a drive late at night and basically running into a bunch of monsters. And but I could actually sort of divine what the game was trying to do. I would have a problem with that sort of abstract nonsense if it was a game that it didn't seem to have any idea of what it was doing with that. And it's hard to put a finger on exactly the difference, right? Like, because one person's complete inane stupidity is another person's, oh, I totally get what this game was doing.
Right.
So I do think it ends up being really, really subjective.
Okay. So I don't mean to leave Chris out, because he actually had one topic he wanted to talk about this week.
No, we're good. I've already covered all my games. We can keep going.
You've already covered Amplitude, I suppose, was what we had on the queue. You're still playing that, though, right?
Yeah, and Rainbow Six Siege as well, and I actually played with Josh this past week, and that was interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I would want Josh on my team in Rainbow Six Siege or not.
Do we have time to talk about that briefly, or should we save that until, like, next week?
Let's save that for next week. That'll give us something, because we're also a little low on questions, so. That'll give us some. Next week we'll be recording our anniversary episode, isn't that right?
Populated that.
Email us questions.
Next week, theoretically,
we'll actually answer them.
Are you guys all gonna fucking be here next week? Because
I'm gonna be next here next week.
I don't think I have a wrestling show next week. Yes, I think I will be there.
It's the all important scheduling portion of this week's diecast.
Sorry, wrestling's more important than diecast.
No, I appreciate that. If I had a wrestling match to go to, I would be wrestling.
Okay, but
there.
More important than the 6th anniversary episode of Spoiler Warning?
Okay, fair.
Think about
no,
all the fun
I,
we could
Bro-
have
if it was
playing
the,
some video
the,
game we haven't figured out yet.
Brock Lesnar's gonna be there. Brock Lesnar's gonna be there. So,
invite him,
you know,
to the 6th anniversary episode of Spoiler Warning.
You do not want Brock Lesnar on this show. You do not want that.
It
that
can't
does not
be
sound
worse
fun.
Than having me on the show.
I don't want to mess with the dude who took down Undertaker at SummerSlam after his undefeated streak. There, I know.
Whoa,
a wrestling thing.
All right.
I know a wrestling thing.
Okay, this show
oh,
is officially
so cool.
Over.
I
right,
know one thing about wrestling, and that is it.
Let's fucking do what Rutskarn wants to do already. So
what
Rutskarn's
been
like a
he's,
hyper
he's like a
puppy.
Fucking schoolgirl.
Hey, I am often
so excited.
Like a schoolgirl, even when there is not the prospect of rolling 3d6 stat blocks.
Oh man,
don't peg that to this. That's just weird.
Are we doing 3d6 straight down again?
Why would we do anything else, Josh? I'm sorry, I don't understand.
I don't know.
So to recap. Last week we did D&D stuff, and that was basically because I made a throwaway joke to Mumbles at some point about the underwater segments, but people seem to really like it, so I figure, hey, let's just keep D&D characters around, just in case something happens where we can do that.
But now we're doing it on the diecast, where you don't get to watch me walking around underwater in a really slow diving suit. Although, I guess we could, like, play SOMO while we're doing this.
I am a firm believer that when you create D&D characters, that you should roll the stats 3d6 strict if you want to be mean to everybody in the game and just inspire feelings of despair. So we're You guys are going to have your stats.
This being Rutskarn, of course, that's exactly what he wants to do.
So I've got, I also, this allows me to keep all the stats on hand myself, so you guys don't have to learn the rules at any point.
I do find it interesting about D&D how you're like the stats are 3d6, which tends to have a standard distribution of like around like 10 or 11 for most rolls. They're going to be more around there more often than they're going to be in the extremes. But that's like well below average for D&D characters.
Wombles, can you say that noise again so I can record it and just have that on hand to play just in my daily life? If I'm on the phone and someone's just going on too long, like in a work-related scenario, just start playing that noise.
Yeah.
All right, Rutskarn, why don't you put on your DM cap and tell us what the hell's going on?
I am already wearing my DM robe and giant plastic key around my neck. So, let's move briskly forward into the brave new future.
Campster's just, like, mortified in the background, like, oh, God.
All right, Campster, pick a number 1, 2, or 3.
Three.
Okay, you'll get the third set of stats I just rolled up here. All right, so this is going to be a brand new character for you guys, because I think the characters you created last time, you know, it's... Honestly, they probably died based on how we left that, so let's just write them off as lost causes and move bravely into the future. Alright, so, Chris, here are your character's stats. For the strength, you have a 13, which is slightly better than average. For constitution, which is toughness, you're worse than average. That's it. Everything else is average. So that's you. You are slightly stronger than normal, and slightly more susceptible to disease and bruises and hurt feelings than most.
That actually sounds like Campster.
Except for the part about being strong and otherwise having average stats, that sounds exactly like me.
So, are we picking race and or class now?
You will in a moment. I will now proceed to Mumbles. 1 or 2?
2.
Perfect. Duty. I was really hoping you would say that.
Oh,
alright, so, check it out, Mumbles. Here's what you got. Your strength and dexterity, they're average. Alright, your constitution, that's how tough you are. That's a 14. That is the best stat that anybody has rolled so far.
Jesus Christ.
In any of the, like, six stat blocks that have been rolled. So you're tough. Next is your intelligence. Your intelligence is a 9. So that's a little dumber than average.
You are John Cena.
I'm John Cena. John Cena's pretty smart, but he's not too smart. Yeah.
Using this method, though, actually 9 is a pretty average stat. But right, yeah. Next is 12. So you're a little wiser than normal. And here's my favorite part: your charisma. You have a charisma of 4.
What? No.
Your charisma score is a 4.
I'm Roman Reigns. You made me Roman Reigns. I hate nerd shit.
Well, Rutskarn, right. You've already done it. We're 5 minutes in.
So, remember, having a low charisma can mean a lot of things. It can mean that you're a Josh.
I don't know how to play a low charisma character, Rutskarn.
Okay,
so high charisma.
I'm afraid you cannot be a bard.
All being low
not
charisma means
a chance
is that you have difficulty persuading or leading others. That is all that having
means,
a low charisma
you
means.
You fucking goddamn motherfucker, cocksucker.
Well, I'm just saying.
Fucking Jesus. I know what it fucking means, and it sucks! Oh! Okay, let's keep going.
Alright, well, that's... Okay,
hey, Rutskarn,
Josh. Turn.
I pick number 1.
Yeah, thank you, Josh. Thanks. Alright, so, I'm gonna run through this fast. You got your weak... You're tiny bit agile. You have a intelligence score of 14. And you have a charisma score of 14.
Can I be a bard? Are we doing AD&D?
No, you cannot be a bard.
Shit, fuck, bards are ridiculous. Okay.
So that was the part where you guys determine what race you are, I guess. That's the part that comes next. So, Chris, given your stat block, what sort of race would you like to be? What do you feel that you would be in this
human,
alternate fantasy
human,
universe?
Human, human.
Good choice.
I'm a human.
Okay, Chris is a human.
He's not even going to try for you? Elf this time. Okay, again, are we doing D&D 2? Is this a 2.0 game?
We are beginning in D&D 2. We may progress beyond that at some point.
Okay. I can be basically any race. Maybe not dwarf.
But who wants to be a dwarf, really, at the end of the
day? No, I mean, nobody wants to be a dwarf. Randy Johnson wants to be a dwarf, and... I think I'm gonna go human, too.
Okay, Mumbles, go.
So boring. I want to be a dwarf, but I want to be a man dwarf with a beard. Wait, are there gnomes? Can I be a gnome? I want to be a gnome.
I believe you could be a gnome. Just give me a moment to check that you have the stats to qualify.
I want to be a bearded man. What?
Actually,
no. Have no charisma.
The minimum charisma of a gnome is 3. Mumbles is fully qualified to be a gnome.
Yeah, motherfuckers.
I am curious though. Is there any class or any race that Mumbles can't be because of the charisma of 4?
Yes, she cannot be an elf.
Okay.
Elves have a minimum charisma of 8 because elves are apparently all.
What are all the races? Are there a lot?
Well,
if there's a lot, don't tell me.
The base races are dwarf, elf, gnome, half elf, halfling. However, I also have a bunch of second edition books that you don't want to fucking know about.
Alright, I'll just be a gnome. Gnome sounds fun. With a beard, and I'm a boy.
Okay.
And Josh and Campster have to be girls. Those are my requirements for this video game that we're playing.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good. Alright, so Mumbles is a boy gnome. Josh and Chris are human women.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mumbles has progressed beyond the normal role-playing tactic of making choices on behalf of her character, and has moved forward to making choices behalf on other players. now we pick classes. Now, I believe... Now, Josh and Chris have already been through this part, so they probably already have a pretty decent idea of where they're going to go with this. Mumbles, what do you want to do with this stat block?
I want to be a necromancer. Can I be a gnome necromancer? Is that not possible?
Well, that's actually something of a complicated question. You might be able to be a mage. What's your intelligence?
Oh, it's not very high. It's a
9. Why are you asking Mumbles?
I wrote it down! Over.
But, you
I
know
wrote
what?
It down!
You know what, though? You are a gnome, which means that it moves right back up to 10, which I believe means you qualify to be a mage.
Oh. Right. So what are gnomes usually? Wait, hold on. I'm sorry, I have more questions, Redskarn. I'm sorry, I'm a newbie.
Absolutely.
What are gnomes usually? What do people usually pick for gnomes as far as classes?
Gnomes generally, they're pastry chefs. Or, like, gardeners, but for small gardens.
Can I be a gardener? Can I seriously be a gardener?
I mean, it's not a character class, but you can garden. That you can create gardens. That is a thing you can do in the game.
I don't know. So there's no people don't really have classes for gnomes in D&D. They just kind of like
no. Okay, so seriously speaking, gnomes are actually a very uncommon choice. Generally, they're wizards because they gain a bonus to their intelligence.
Yeah.
So mage is the typical choice.
Good.
Race bonuses? I've completely forgotten. Like,
Well,
elves get a bonus to dex, don't they?
Yes, elves are plus dex minus, I believe, constitution 1 point. It is just 1 point in either direction.
Right.
Gnomes are a bonus to intelligence and a penalty to wisdom. Gnomes are curious and inquisitive, but not particularly, you know, they don't think things through very well.
This is going to be great.
I feel like this is dangerous ground already. I feel like we're sowing the seeds for a real catastrophe. All right, so, Josh, what do you got?
What the hell were my stats again? I should probably
Josh,
write this
you are
down
smart,
somewhere. If
and
I'm
you are charismatic,
smart.
And you are moderately agile.
Damn, it's a shame I can't be a bard.
It is a shame. I could just, since we're past the joke about haha, you don't qualify for that. I could just read off what classes you do qualify for, if you'd like.
What are the qualifications for bard, actually?
Just a moment. Okay, to be a bard, you need a 12 dexterity, 13 intelligence, and a 15 charisma.
Damn.
Unfortunately, there's no race that raises charisma.
Yeah, I was thinking if I switched to elf, I could maybe make it, but... I'm torn between thief or yet another mage. Can I be a specialist mage?
Yeah, actually. You know what? I'm going to say you qualify to be an enchanter.
Okay. What's the opposing school of enchanting?
It's not precisely how it works, but it basically
Isn't
means that you will not be able to cast... you will not be able to cast, I would have to look it up, actually, but there's two schools of magic you won't be able to cast.
Don't remember.
It's right. Actually in a book which is in another room in the house.
It's Slytherin. You can't get into Slytherin.
Oh, wait, actually, no, here it is. To be an enchanter, you technically require a higher charisma, but I'm going to let you have this. And it means you cannot you cannot cast evocation or necromancy.
Okay, well, that's not a huge deal. Wait. Evocation or invocation?
They are... It is actually invocation / evocation.
Oh, shit. No fireball.
I know. This book can't make up its mind whether it's evocation or invocation. So it literally just says... INVOC / EVOC.
Yeah, okay. I'll be an enchanter, I guess, and have all the lame magic powers.
Yes, only the lamest. Exclusively the lame one. Alright, Chris, what you got?
What do I qualify for?
You qualify to be, I believe, a fighter, a thief, a priest, or a mage, but I'm just going to double check real quick.
We need at least one fighter, Campster, just saying. We got a bunch of fucking
about playing
nerd
fight.
Mages
priest it is.
Running around. God damn
All right.
it.
Chris is going to be a priest. And are you going to be a good priest or an evil priest?
I am a good priest.
I think that's a poor choice, but
Are we using priest interchangeably with cleric, or is that a different class?
Cleric is technically his class.
That's a different class.
Technically, his class is cleric. Priest is the category he belongs to.
What?
Why am I not heavy drinking when we're doing this? You guys
that
are
is
lucky
an excellent question.
If I hadn't just woke up, I would be a bottle deep.
Which reminds me...
What reminds you, Josh?
It reminds me that I need to run to the other room and grab a great big bottle of whiskey that I bought today. I'll be right
Obviously,
back.
Obviously, I require the
Don't
absolute sobriety from
me.
All of my players at all times so that you can concentrate on all the subtleties of the
Fred,
world I'm going to create.
Fred, you were just lucky that I had just woken up and I have no food in my belly. Otherwise, I would be having quite a bit of booze right now.
I'm in exactly the same situation, but I'm not as wise as you. Or am I?
So if I can fraternize for a second, I'm actually the one who invented the version of D&D to play while drunk. I'm not actually afraid of drunk players. This is not new to me. The best, I've never actually done this, but the best idea for a drunken RP scenario I've had is you run a game of Paranoia, where everybody gets drunk except the DM and the person who's playing the loyalty officer.
Oh, no.
And everyone gets really drunk before the game, and then the debriefing is held the next morning.
You are evil. Man. That's not a game to play while you're drunk.
That's fucked up.
It's a game to play while you're hungover and don't want to fucking put up with the DM's bullshit.
That is emotional. That's an emotional cage that you trap someone in. That is fucked up.
So on that note, let's choose alignments for you guys.
Oh, yeah, that's a thing.
So is everybody familiar with the D&D alignment system? I'm going to explain it just in case anyone else isn't anyway. So D&D's alignment system is an attempt to codify morality into two axes and nine categories. Like, good fucking luck.
If you want to check out my resurrected music blog that I just started up 2 weeks ago, I have playlists for each one of the different alignments that I made a couple years ago. So check that out, listeners at home. Hoo-hoo.
Yeah. I'm presuming that most of you are pretty familiar with the alignment system, but I'm just going to go over it again. It's on one side, there is lawful, neutral, and chaotic. Meaning, basically, whether one is predisposed towards organization and obeying one set of rules, or to taking every situation as it comes and leaving oneself open and leaving one's options open. On the other side is good, neutral, evil, which I imagine is pretty self-explanatory. You make an alignment by combining a category from the first set with a category from the second set. Sorry, a choice from the first set with a choice from the second set. This is not one of the systems in the game that involves mixing eight different categories on the fly. There are systems like that, and thankfully none of you will have to interact with them. So Chris, you said that you're a good priest. That means that you're probably good aligned or neutral aligned. Other than that, it's all
lawful
down to
evil.
You.
Pick lawful Chris.
Chaotic good.
Chaotic good.
Oh, what a cutie.
So that's like your Robin Hood type. All right, Josh.
Yeah.
What's your alignment?
Well, I could go chaotic neutral, but that's too obvious, as is chaotic evil. I'll go lawful neutral.
Lawful neutral? That's interesting.
You guys are so lame. I'm going to be chaotic neutral! Fuck yeah!
All right, so we have a chaotic neutral gnome.
You're going to have a lot of fun partying with us, Campster.
Chaotic neutral gnome mage, a lawful neutral human enchanter, and a chaotic good human priest. I think all that remains is to ask you guys for your character names.
Can I want to be Edward. My name
okay.
is Edward.
Mumbles is named Edward. If this turns into like...
Dorian.
Alright, Chris is Dorian. Josh,
wait,
what are you?
No, you can't be Dragon Age Inquisition.
Doreen.
Wait, I want to be Eduardo.
Eduardo. Okay. Presumably that makes sense within the bog-standard Western European fantasy setting that this takes place inside. Eduardo. Eduardo the gnome. Perfect.
Oh, God. So, if it's not
Eduardo...
already clear to everyone... Like, our my spoiler warning persona character was created by me mishearing and subsequently misspelling a name that Rutskarn came up with. I suck at naming things.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Well, why don't I give you a character name, and then you can mishear and misspell it?
I mean, that would be funny. I don't fucking trust you to name a character ever for me.
Come on, Joshua, just the first thing that you think of. Just use your heart. Let your heart guide the way, like me and Eduardo.
Okay, Josh is playing Edmana, the human enchanter.
Edmana.
Oh, can we all be Eds? Wait, we need the full trinity. Because if he's Edema, and I'm Eduardo, then Campster needs to be an Edward, too.
Nope.
Sorry, goddamn it.
All right, so we have Edmana, Eduardo, and Doreen. And they will be coming to a diecast near you very soon. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have this week, so we'll have to leave it there.
Oh, we're not actually doing it?
Nope, looks like we're not. Unfortunately, some complete asshole just wanted to talk about some indie game that they made. Like, who talks about indie games?
What the hell, Campster?
Sorry.
Well, unfortunately, Campster ruined another diecast, but thankfully another one will be by next week, and we will be there to ambush it, seize it, and diecast. I lost control of this analogy.
We're going to spend like 45 minutes generating Seamus' character next time and still not get to it.
I blame Josh. Josh, you did this. I tried really hard to go as quickly as I could. I got through it. I didn't even talk about Danganronpa. I just said that it's out.
And I appreciate that. Well, we did what we did.
Actually, isn't it Rachel's birthday today, and that's why Seamus is out?
Indeed. Is she the one turning 18?
Happy birthday, Rachel. Please don't murder us.
Go buy yourself some cigarettes.
Also, Rachel, just use your best judgment. I don't even know when the best part to cut that is. Rachel, fix our show. We're incompetent. We don't know what we're doing. We've been making it up this whole time.
Don't tell Seamus, though. He'll fire us.
Oh, shit. She's probably going to leave this in.
That's fine.
I haven't stopped recording, actually.
God damn it, Josh.
I'll do that now.